Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone. I am Leona Abraham Brando, host of Blog Talk Radio, Shedding Light. I'd like to have everyone take a few moments just to close your eyes and meditate just for a few seconds about what you would feel like if you were in a world right now that had nothing going on as far as stressful situations or events. Think about what this world would be like, and I want you to close your eyes and just meditate for a few minutes. If there would be no racism, if there would be no criminal activities out there, especially caused by the very people who are assigned or appointed to keep everyone protected. Think what it would be like if you could walk down the street or walk through the forest and not have to worry about being attacked. Think what it would be like if you did stumble and made a mistake, and rather than be thrown into prison for life or life without, or put on death row, you were put in hospitals and rehabilitation programs where they would work with you and treat you like a human being and not a number. Think about all of these things, that you could go out in the street and meet strangers and talk to them and become friends with them without having to worry about something going bad. Think about living in a country that took care of its country, that took care of its people, that protected them, provided for them, and ensured that no one would stumble because there would be no stress, there would be no need for it. There's so much going on in the world today and so many countries getting involved. And this is all part of the stress that we go through, and you can open your eyes now. These are the stressful situations. We have problems in this country, severe problems that need to be addressed. Yet we have a president that's focused on other countries, other issues, going over to other countries and talking about their human rights violations when we have them right here in America. We have them right in our prisons. We have them in the streets. It is okay to help other countries if your country is together. But when you have so many serious issues in your own backyard that need to be addressed, you take care of your business at home first. They talk about this country right now almost being in a recession financially. And yet all this money, millions of dollars being sent to other countries. We have people that are old and dying in prison, but they don't think of compassionate releases. They don't think about letting these people out of prison because they are no longer a danger to anybody. They can't even take care of themselves. How are they going to harm anybody else? But we have compassionate releases in mind. At least the advocates do. And hopefully some of the legislative members, the leaders, also are considering these people. There are people in prison that are in their 80s, people that are in their 60s. There are people in their 50s that are disabled, permanently damaged. We have people that went to prison when they were in their young ages, under the age of 25. And now they're in prison and they're in their late 70s, 80s, 60s, whatever it may be. These are the lost and forgotten. While our president and other people are so focused on other countries, we have our citizens of the United States dying in the prisons, dying in the streets by those whom we're supposed to trust. We have racial issues. We have divisions between our Republican and Democratic parties. We have division between advocates. People supposedly fighting for the same causes yet fighting amongst one another or ignoring one another. We have people of color talking about the Caucasians, the white people, when they're treating their own indifferent because of the social statuses. People of color, they get up in the world and they forget those on the bottom. I never forget where I come from. That's the way we should feel. But we shouldn't even have any racial issues. All DNA began in Africa. And Africa one time also included the Middle East. It was one continent until the flood. And then there was division. And then people were traveling all over the world. It increased the islands, the areas that grew up, came about to be cities and countries. The pigmentation of someone's skin shouldn't matter because it all came from the same continent. And if we know anything about, we know there's an equator. We know that we can be below the equator, above the equator. We know that living in these environments determines our pigmentation. People portray Jesus as blonde hair and blue eyes, or brown, golden brown hair and blue eyes. But yet he was born in the African and Middle Eastern areas. He never traveled to Iceland or Alaska or any of those places where the skin would be really bright. So he would have had to have been a beige. So we have all over the world, we have the black, we have the beige, we have the red, we have the brown, and we have the white. Pigmentation. Everybody bleeds the same. Everybody hurts the same. Everybody cries the same. Everyone feels the same. And all these things going on around the world, it's not just the white man that's feeling bad about it. It's not just the white man that's trying to help. It's a strange thing when people of color, all colors, including white, it's a shame when they all come together when there's a threatening situation that involves all of them. Right now, if this world was to come to its end, and it said it's going to be like worse than Sodom and Gomorrah, that means the hail, the fires, everything's going to happen at one time. Everyone's going to be scattered all over the place, looking for help, trying to hide from the disasters that have been so mentioned in Bible scriptures. They will be trying to hide from all of this. Picture yourself being alone with no one. And say every member of your family was destroyed. Now you're alone out there in this world, and all of these things are happening, the fires, the floods, the tornado, everything's happening at once, the hailstorm, as it talks about in the Bible. It's going to, if that's how bad it's going to be, who will you turn to? You will turn to anyone. You won't look at their color. You won't look at their pigmentation. You won't look at their disabilities. You won't look at their social status. You won't look at anything. Because when desperate situations happen, people forget, and they just seek help from anywhere and anyone that they can. Sometimes I think about the blind and the deaf. People that are blind, they don't have racism in their body because they can't see the person that they're talking to. They can become the best of friends without even looking at the pigmentation of one color, skin. So when you meditate on some of these things and see how comforting it can be when you look at all the good things that are happening while you're meditating and not looking at all the violence, not looking at all the hatred, not looking at all the racism. Because audience, I want you to know, we're living at a time, people don't realize it, but it's not going to get better. According to Bible scriptures, it's going to get worse. Critical times, hard to deal with. So when we look at people in prison, we can't stereotype. We cannot stereotype, nor can we stereotype for those in hospitals, nursing homes, those in the streets, those in the homeless shelters, those in the rehabilitative programs. We can't stereotype because every situation is different. And we're all a part, we're all part of the causes that have put these people in the situations they are in. Because when they were born, they weren't born bad. Children are born innocent. They come into a world where there's either love or hate. And many people raise their children with the same biases that they were raised with the same attitudes that they were raised with, to bully, to hate because of race or because of disability or because of social statuses. And unfortunately, these innocent babies and children that are born, they start off being so innocent that they wouldn't know the difference. You see some of these little kids, white and black, hugging one another and playing with one another. But that's not the case throughout the world, especially in this country of the United States. Many of you, including myself, we have friends of all races, and we have no problem with it. But when a tragedy happens, and it happens between black and white, brown and white, beige and white, red and white, some people take sides. And this is what's sad. Because some people will take sides simply because one of those individuals are of their race, whether it be Irish, Italian, whether it be Indian, whether it be black, African American, whether it be Hispanic, whatever the case may be. You don't hurt my people. But wake up. We're all our people. We're all your people. Regardless of what country you were born in, if that person stands by you through thick and thin as a brother or sister, then you need to forget about siding with your race, and you need to look at who is actually siding with you, who is standing behind you. A lot of people go to prison, and all their friends they hung out with, associated with, I don't care what color they were, a lot of them forget. A lot of them forget, and they move on like you're a thing of the past. But think about it. That person was as true to you as you were to them. Whatever you did to stumble, or whoever stumbled you, whatever the case may be, a true friend is not going to desert you. They're not going to turn their back on you. They say in the Bible that Christ Jesus, he was in prison. He was abused. He was deprived. He was spit upon. He was shamed, humiliated. He knows exactly what goes on in these prisons. Even though he may not have committed any crime, this is what the government did to him. So do you think when they talk about the Christ coming back into this world, he's coming back for simply for the wrongdoers, the ones that stumbled, the ones in prison? Heck no. There's a scripture in the Bible in the New Testament. I can't remember if it's Luke or Mark or John or Matthew, but it's in there. And it says, it actually says, vengeance is mine. That's why it tells us all the time to try to forgive our enemies. It's very difficult to forgive people when they're consistently doing everything in their power to destroy you, whether through themselves, whether through their family members, whether through their friends, whether through the connections they have in and out of the penal system, in and out of the nursing homes, or wherever it may be. Sometimes we have to look at this government. We have to look at people who are behind the incarcerated in courts, who are behind them going to prison and serving life sentences, especially the wrongfully convicted, especially those who committed a first offense, never been in trouble before. We have to look at these government leaders who are connected with the courts, especially prosecution, because it's known, it's been known for a long time Prosecutors tamper with evidence. They lie. They bring in false witnesses. We have judges who are corrupt. And I'm not saying all of them, but I'll tell you, when it comes to races, they do stick together. There are certain races where when you see the prosecution and the judge of the same race, when you see a lot of these things going on, and you see it's being done with a lot of injustice involved, a lot of lies being told, you know there's something going on. Unfortunately, many of us cannot do anything about it. But our legislative members are not stupid, or they wouldn't be in the position they're in. They know right from wrong. And when they see injustices, they know what's going on. And it's not just a matter of talking about these injustices. It's a matter of doing something about it. Sometimes people start out in a powerful way. They start out to do a lot of good, to change the injustices going on in this country. But somewhere along the line, they get tired of it, and you don't hear as much about it. You hear very little about it, or you don't see the progress. And then, unfortunately, you have these legislative members who are running for some kind of position, like governor, or maybe Senate, even maybe the president, who knows. But then you see, you get all these emails from them, you get all these, all of a sudden they care so much. But prior to and following their campaign, when it's all over with, it goes back to the same thing. Trying to get help from those leaders who were so quick to try to get your vote or try to get your attention, but they forget. Now, I want to let all of you know, this is not about race when I talk, because there's good and bad in everyone. And that's what we need to start looking at. We have to start looking at the attitudes, the behaviors, the heart, H-E-A-R-T, the heart of man, not the C-O-L-O-R of man. Because if we all started associating with people that have a heart and that are all trying to do the same thing to help all people, not just a certain race, not just a certain religion, but if we were all to come together as a whole and try to do the right things, try to look at individuals as individuals, not looking at them as numbers, not looking at them as nobodies, not looking at them as being deformed or illiterate. You know, we just look for things in other people that's going to make us look better. That's what it's all about. We live in a country that if you don't make fun of somebody else or if you don't put someone else down, then maybe people are going to look at you. And that's not the way to live. That's not living godly, and it's not living a happy life. It's living a phony life. It's not being real. And we live in a country right now where we have so many people that are not real. They're afraid to speak their piece. If I disagree with someone or if I have a problem, I'm going to speak out. And I've been a part of coalitions, and I backed away. But these coalitions, if I send something to them, there are so many of these advocates in those coalitions that won't respond to me because they have that kind of hate. Who is she thinking she is? Or what is she thinking she is? Or what is she trying to tell me? I know what I'm doing. These things happen. But there are people in the coalition that go behind the scene instead of speaking out in the coalition, the groups, the Google groups or whatever it might be, to say, I agree, Leona, or do this, or I think you're doing the right thing. They won't say it in that coalition. They'll send separate emails. To me, that's not being real. Because if you think that I or someone else in the coalition or the groups or the organizations are saying or doing something right that makes sense, and others are getting mad because they don't want to hear it. So if you feel that they're wrong and that person is right, say it in an email. It's called transparency. We need to be transparent. But we have so many people that are so insecure that they're afraid to do anything transparent because they're afraid their peers, whom they're trying to associate with, for whatever reason, if they have to be fake, there's no need to associate with them because those fake people are insecure. We need to come together if we're going to, especially when it comes to the criminal justice system. We're talking about criminal justice reform. We're talking about law enforcement reform. We're talking about all these different things that we need to work on. And yes, human rights violations is another thing. We have a lot of human rights violation, and I hope Mr. President deals with some of that here and not going over to other countries like the big shit and telling them how to control their human rights violations. I got an email the other day from one of the coalitions, and it was interesting because Joe Biden spoke so much about criminal justice reform when he was running for the presidency, and yet I understand now nothing has been done about it. Nothing. It's almost like he went back to the way it was he was before, because apparently, from what I understand, the president and the vice president at one time were a problem to criminal justice reform, not an asset, until they ran again. Here we go. When they ran for their positions and they needed these votes, all of a sudden, their whole attitude, their whole mind, their whole goal changes until they get in, and now you don't hear anything about it. You know, there's people in prison who are in wheelchairs. They use the prisons as a means to provide or to incarcerate the mentally ill, which we have an epidemic, as I always say, in this country. Those who are addicted, they're thrown into the prison. Those who stumble, wrongfully convicted, they're thrown into prison. Victims who became offenders, they're thrown into prison. I wish that every legislative member, every government official that thinks it's okay for these things to happen, I don't wish evil on anyone, but to happen to them and see how they like it. The only thing is there's so many of them, it has happened to them. But because of their status, because of their position, they were able to cover up their loved ones stumbling, their loved ones messed up. We know it. It's happened with government, even here in the state I'm in. And that's where we go with this disparity, not only racial disparity, but social disparity. It's okay for my kid to get away with it because I am a senator, or I am a president, or I am a governor. It's okay for my kid to get away with it, but it's not okay for your kid because you're not up here where we are. That's pretty much the way they think. If we're going to make positive changes in this country, we need to come together in unity. There's a group, it's called Society First. They're out of Florida. They just had a peaceful protest, and it's an empathy event. They're trying to abolish life without parole. They're trying to abolish life without parole because life without parole is the same as the death penalty. The death penalty and life without parole should both be abolished. Now, I interview every Wednesday Miriam Jacobs, psychosocial therapist from the Netherlands. She talks about the comparison between the prisons in the United States and other countries. The United States has mass incarceration, 2.3 million men, women, and youth in prisons and jails in the United States. It's the only country that has this many. I don't think any other country has more than 100,000. If they do, it's not much more, but not 2.3 million. And their programs work. And they don't have them behind steel walls and bars and treating them like animals. And some people, many people in this society, treat their animals much, much better than these people that are being incarcerated. They don't give the incarcerated men, women, and youth names. They call them by numbers. Is that the way you would want God to treat you if you made a mistake? Because we've all made mistakes. We're all sinners, as many of you know it, especially those who read the Bible or once read the Bible. Would you want to be treated that way? I don't think so. I don't think so. And I think you're pretty sick if you feel that it's okay to do that. I really do. Because it's sick. It really, really is sick. Now, society first. Again, going back to Florida. And I wish that they would follow suit in this state and other states. But on March 25th, 2022, Society First is going to be hosting a day of empathy for Dream Corps Justice. And they're going to be announcing it at a later time, and they're going to be announcing where it's going to be. But it's going to be a national thing. And I hope that you will all look up Society First and contact the people involved and ask them how you can go about joining or helping. Empathy event. If we have a heart, we're gonna want to be involved. And I've already expressed my interest, because that's what we need right now. We need a lot of empathy for a lot of people who are suffering so much. People that are addicted, many of them are addicted because they try to cover up traumas that they've been through. And people, especially if they're childhood traumas, even though they're grown, a lot of people, when they have been violated as children or adolescents, a lot of them will take to substances. That's the only way they can cope. Many of them end up with psychological, or all of them end up with some kind of psychological issue. But for those that don't take up some kind of substance, alcohol or whatever, you have others that will turn their trauma in a different direction. They may end up becoming weightlifters. They may end up trying to do something to strengthen their body so that people will see that they're big and they're powerful and they're not going to be able to mess with me because I work so hard to keep from being violated again or abused again. So you have people that turn to substances. You have people that turn to weights and gyms and all this. You have people that end up committing suicide. You have people that have so much anger in them that it doesn't take much to set them off. So that combined with getting involved with certain people, whether it be relationships with another woman or man, or whether it be association with poor peers, with troublemakers or violent people, these things can happen. And this is what we also have to look at. Why is somebody like that associating with someone like this? Or why is this person going out with this person when this person's more experienced, been around, likes to party, likes to do all these things? You have to look at all these situations. And that's why I say no one should be stereotyped. Because we were all made specifically for one person, and that was one being, and that is our Creator. He made us all different. And that's why He caused us to have this, He created this DNA. I had an Irish woman come running to me one day, and she said, Leona, I just saw on TV, do you know that all of our DNA comes from the continent of Africa? I said, yes, Mildred. I said, yes, all DNA comes from Africa, which means all of you have African blood in you. Regardless of your race, you all have it in you. It all started in the very beginning in the continent of Africa, in the Middle East. People better wake up. Try to do some research. You know, I study religion and I study cultures. And I'll tell you one thing. It's very, very interesting, especially when you get into the center, the core of it. I study religion. You know, there's nothing I could say negative about any religion because I've been involved in mostly all of them. And other than, with the exception of the Arabs and the Jews, the first five books of the Bible, all others have the entire Bible from the Old Testament to the New Testament. It talks about all the things that are happening today. So when I hear people in churches saying, God talked to me, God didn't talk to them verbally, but he talks through Bible scriptures. Just like everything that's happening now, like in Matthew 24, it's talking about war than rumors of war. In 2 Timothy chapter 3, it talks about critical times hard to deal with. The hearts of many will grow cold. People are going to betray people. People are going to turn their back. They're going to be proud and boastful. It talks everything that's going on. In 2 Peter chapter 3, it talks about a lot of people, scoffers coming after and talking about, oh, people say the end's coming. It's been years and thousands of years and nothing's happened yet. What makes us think that this world is coming to an end? But then it goes on to say, but be mindful of the day that God told Noah to build an ark. In those days, there was no rain. The mist came from the ground. So everybody was laughing at Noah building this huge ark, he and his son. They were laughing at him. And he's trying to tell them at the same time while he's building to be watchful, to look at all these things. But they were laughing until the door closed to that ark and the rain started coming down. And they were all trying to get in. It was too late. And it rained and rained and rained. The flood was so high that it was an ocean all of a sudden. The ark was in the ocean. It says in 2 Peter chapter 3, be mindful of that. Because God made a promise after that flood that killed everybody, except Noah, his wife, and his three sons. God made a promise that there will never be an end to this world by flood. But the next time would be by fire. It says it right in Genesis. It says by fire. We have fires going on all over the place now. We have fires. Look at California, one after another, and some of those surrounding countries. But above all, look at this, the global warming. They say this year has been at its hottest. The earth has been at its hottest in all history. But it's going to get a lot worse. Then we have the nuclear weapons. And look what's going on right now with Ukraine and Russia. Look what's going on over there when now all these countries are getting involved and they're trying to sign Ukraine on to NATO so that they can all attack Russia at one time. And it's talking about Russia with the nuclear weapons. He's got his forces on high alert with these nuclear weapons. And do you know what it says in the Bible scriptures and Revelations? It says all these nations are all going to be brought together for destruction. They're going to all be brought together for that Armageddon, for that particular area is going to be total. And then that's when everybody's going to forget about race. That's when everybody's going to forget about social statuses. That's when everybody's going to come together because there's going to be a worldwide disaster, catastrophe. And you're not going to be looking at somebody's pigmentation or someone's social status. You're going to be looking for help. You're going to be running in all different directions trying to get some help, trying to get somebody to prevent you from being a part of the disaster. You better think about it because it's going to be too late when you finally decide this isn't worth it. It's not worth hating somebody. It's not worth hating somebody that did nothing to me. It's not worth talking about somebody that did nothing to me just because I don't like what they're doing or I'm jealous of them or envious or whatever. If you're doing the best you can, if you're being transparent about everything you do and say, and you have a heart to have compassion, to show compassion and understanding for someone's situation, and trying to help in any way you can if it's possible, and trying to prevent others from harming others or talking about others. If you're doing all these things, you're doing the right thing. But if you're not, you better get it together, because we can't change our mind at the very last second. We can't say, God, I'm sorry, at the very last second. We can't stop hating at the very last second.
Mm-hmm.
These are some things that we really need to think about. Because time, it says the signs of the time in the Bible. It talks about the disasters that are going on in the world. It talks about the inconsistency in the weather all over the world. We have seen weather we have never seen in our life. Today is warm. Yesterday was freezing. Next week it's going to be in the 60s. We have seen floods, earthquakes, tornadoes in places, even in this state. In all my years living in Massachusetts, I never saw a tornado, yet we had 3 or 4 of them this past year. Hurricanes, I've seen a few hurricanes, but even hurricanes are getting worse. Earthquakes, I've never seen an earthquake. I've never been, thank God. But they were talking on the news saying that there were many earthquakes here. But because they were not major, they didn't report them all. But they did report a few. And the changes in the weather is not just happening in the United States. It's happening worldwide. They're all seeing changes in weather. They've never seen weather before. Some places, they've seen snow. They've never seen snow before. Look at down Florida, Georgia, places like that. They're getting cold weather just like we have. I think it's exciting myself because I have read over the Bible numerous times. Scriptures about what we have to look forward to ahead of this system of things. The perfection that we never got to see in the beginning because of evil spirits. They call it Satan, the dragon, whatever you might want to call it. But in the book of Revelation, chapter 12, verses 7 to 12, it talks about Satan was at one time one of the angels, the good angels in heaven. But he turned bad, and he tried to deceive even the creator of all things. He was thrown out of heaven onto this earth. So it says, woe to the earth, because Satan knows he has but a short time. And that's what's happening now. We're not living and fighting amongst flesh and blood. But in Ephesians 6, it says, we're fighting against powers and principalities, rulers of darkness in high places in this world. So what we're dealing with is evil spirits in people. Because when Jesus was walking this earth, remember now, he not only healed the blind and the deaf, he not only healed the lepers, he not only healed the oppressed, he healed the possessed. He healed people that were possessed by evil spirits. And once he got rid of those evil spirits, those people were just as normal and thankful and grateful as anyone would be. So we're living in a world now, if someone's doing injustice, if someone's doing to you injustice, it's because either they're possessed or they're Satan followers that were also thrown out of heaven, as it says in Revelation 12, 7 to 12. Satan wasn't thrown out alone, so that goes to show you there was some evil angel followers with him. And maybe that's why God is being so slow to come. Because he wants to make sure that anyone that goes through those gates on that day are not going to be deceptive people. Are not going to be evil people. And although we don't like it, I just lost one of my sisters. She was only 62 years old. She died of cancer. And now one of my other sisters is saying she don't believe in God anymore. But we have to realize when the Bible was created, when it was composed by prophets, loyal prophets of God and disciples, it mentioned in the book of Job everything that Job went through. But Satan at the time was in heaven, and God is asking him what he's doing. And he said he was roaming and roving about looking for someone that he could deceive. God trusted Job enough to know that he was going to be a faithful servant. He sent Satan to Job. Job lost everything. Job had been blessed with everything. He not only lost his cattle, he lost his children, he lost everything. So much that his wife told him, why don't you just curse God, and died. He had boils all over him and everything. And people think because he was going through all that tragic, all that trauma, people thought he did something terribly wrong. And we have people in society today that do the same thing. They judge people that have fallen without even knowing all the facts. They judge people who are incarcerated without even knowing all the facts. Job had three of his friends go to visit him. They were supposed to go to comfort him. But instead, they were making it look like he had done something wrong, deserving of what he was going through. And finally, when God did come and speak with Job, he reminded Job of all the things that he did when he created mankind. And again, if you close your eyes and you look at the beautiful white clouds, the blue skies, the beautiful green trees, the mountains, the oceans, the lakes, the rivers, even though that we see so much that has been destroyed by mankind, again, Satan and his followers, if we think about all the things that God has created and how powerful he is, he can stop Satan in a split second with the blink of an eye. But we have to believe in God, and we have to praise God, and we have to pray to God. And we cannot give up and say, I don't believe in God, when something bad happens in our lives. Because if we're that strong in our feelings towards our Creator, that strength has to be, and love has to be unconditional. It has to be unconditional. So all I can say is don't ever give up, because we have trials and tribulations. I have a loved one incarcerated, and I love him dearly. But God forbid, if something happened seriously to death, I wouldn't give up on God, because I know it's not God that's doing all of this. It's the evil. It's the evil that is working amongst people. And they have to go before their maker too. We all have to go before our maker. And we, like I said earlier, we can't change our mind at the last minute. And I'm going to tell you, there's people out there in the communities right now that will someday end up in prison. It's inevitable. But we have an opportunity to try to change that. We have to start looking for those who are going through some trials and tribulations on the outside and try to help them before they get to that point. And a lot of ways you can do it is looking. When you're talking to people, listen to what they're saying. Look at their body language. Depressed people walk around with their heads down all the time. They talk about giving up, or they talk about not believing anymore. If this world can come together as it has been since this Ukrainian and Russian thing, everybody's coming together in favor of Ukraine. If everybody came together like that in favor of our Creator, maybe we wouldn't see the wars going on in Ukraine and Russia. Maybe we wouldn't see the prisons full of incarcerated individuals. I see people coming together, in thousands and thousands and thousands of people coming together to kiss the Pope's hand, to praise people like Donald Trump, to come together to do all these things that have nothing to do with how you got here and anything that may have been given to you as a blessing. But yet, rather than praise, coming together as a whole world in unity to pray to God for peace, to pray to God for forgiveness, understanding, compassion, mercy, whatever, you don't see it happening. You don't see it happening in this country. You don't see it happening anywhere. That's a shame. That's a shame. You know, it's just like, as I mentioned earlier, with the Arabs and the Jews, with the five books in the Bible. What is it? Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, and Deuteronomy. They believe in Jesus as well, the Christ. But they don't believe that he is God, and a lot of people think he is God, and he is not God, because the Christ Jesus himself is telling people he is the Son of God. But they talk, one of the things they have to say, when the Bible began, Abraham and Sarah were supposed to have been blessed with Isaac, but Sarah couldn't wait, you know, so that shows how much faith she had. She couldn't have had that much faith in God to know that when he said he was going to give them Isaac, and it didn't come fast enough for her. She gave her maiden, her slave woman, to her husband, and Ishmael was born. Now, people look at the Muslims as being evil or not equal to all those that believe in the Christ. But when Abraham and his wife sent Hagar away with Ishmael, and they were in the desert, and Ishmael was dying, an angel of God told Hagar that her son Ishmael would also become a great nation. People think when they hear the name Allah, that it's a Muslim God, it's something evil. But in the Arabic language, Allah or Allah is God. The same God, just said in a different name because it's a different country. People say Jesus. In Central America, South America, places like that, they say Jesus. This is why I say you have to get to know the different cultures. There's good and bad in everybody. And that's what I started to say with religions. There's good and bad even in religions, with people. And some religions, I listened to that, what's his name, Hagee on Daystar. I listened to him one time. I couldn't listen to him again. Because he talks about all of these evil people in the prisons. He's talking about prisoners. He doesn't know what he's talking about. That's not a man of God. That's not a person that's compassionate. That's not a man that's looking at people on the outside as well. People all over the world, good and evil. But he's looking at anybody behind bars, which is ridiculous, which is stupid. As I always say, look at Moses. Moses killed an Egyptian. You people, when you read your Bibles in your churches, you're talking about Moses. He was a powerful person that was chosen by God to lead the people, the slaves, out of Egypt. King David, the line where Jesus came from, King David's line of heritage. King David, not only did he impregnate one of his loyal soldier's wives while the loyal soldier was on the battlefield, but he also got her pregnant. He also had the husband killed. Another murderer. But he felt so, so bad, remorseful. That's the book of Psalms, a lot of it came from King David. He was so, so sorry for what he did that God forgave him and used him in a powerful way. And then, of course, we have the Apostle Paul, whose initial name was Saul, who killed so many Christians. He killed hundreds and hundreds of Christians before he was struck down and blinded by the Christ Jesus on his way to one of those cities. And then he became a powerful servant of God. And he's in your Bible, the Apostle Paul. And he went through a lot. He was in prison. He was beaten. He was stoned. He went through hell and back after he became a servant of God. Prison, murderers, that's what they were. They were murderers, but God forgave them. So when these people like Hagee and people out in the communities that are so quick to judge the incarcerated, they better start reading their Bibles. Because God forgave murderers as well as he forgave you. God did not judge anybody. He He did not talk about anybody behind their back. He did not try to become corrupt or greedy, which we have in this country. It's greed, because that's what prisons are all about. Prisons for profit. They're making so much money off of these incarcerated individuals that they want to keep the prisons full. That's why you hear of so many people, even after they're found innocent, many of them still sit in prison for months and months and months after being found innocent. And how many of you have voted for the death penalty, wanting so much vengeance, you wanted these people killed? You voted for the death penalty, and months later, years later, they find out these people that were executed were innocent. What does that make you? What does that make you? And these people in the prisons, a lot of them get targeted. A lot of them get targeted. They put them on blocks they shouldn't be on. They destroy them physically, some mentally, and many spiritually. They prevent them from getting involved in programs to keep their minds occupied. I sent an email once to a regional director of a contracted medical provider with the Department of Corrections. I sent an email, and I copied that email to all these politicians and others. And I said this individual was seeking help medically for over a year, and they had been stalling and stalling and stalling. So because I copied it to all these people, he responded and said he would take care of it. You know, last year they took care of it. What was supposed to be minor surgery, they made major. They took everything from that individual, leaving him permanently damaged. And these are the people that you look up to. You don't look at them as criminals because they got titles. You don't look at them as criminals because they work for a government position. Again, close your eyes and meditate and put your son or daughter in that situation. Then you have some of these lawyers and law firms that help people that are having their violations, their civil and human rights violated. They help people. But they're part of all of this connection, the targeting. And word gets around from one lawyer to another. If they want to mess somebody up or prevent somebody from getting help, they will pass the word around. They will put in a word so that other lawyers like themselves will follow suit and deny the help to those individuals. It's happened. I've been advocating for the incarcerated for 25 years. I started New Vision Organization in 2004. We advocated for the incarcerated men, women, and youth across the country. We helped them with everything. Those on death row, those in life without parole, those soon to be released. We helped them with everything. Unfortunately, I got burnt out. In 2014, I stepped down, and I let some of my volunteer paralegals take over. And one of the people that was acting as president messed them up so bad that rather than try to resolve the issue, because it was founded in Massachusetts, they registered out in California under a new tax exempt. When I found out about this, I contacted the state of Massachusetts, and I got it back up again. But instead of doing the national, I focused only on one state, only on first-time offenders of any offense, and those who are having their civil rights violated. Now, we have an organization that tries to seek attorneys, civil rights attorneys, for these prisoners that are being so destroyed, traumatized, kept in solitary confinement, on restrictive blocks, beaten, tormented, physically and mentally damaged. You think that the lawyers would get involved? No. You know why? Because some of these lawyers have a problem. They have a problem with me because I tell it like it is. And I tell them, if you can't do it, and all what I'm getting from ACLU and Prison Illegal Services even, is that they don't have the resources, the funding, they don't have the manpower, and yet you see them all over the place in these coalitions that we should be in, but we're too busy trying to find them to cover for the clients who are very much in need of legal assistance. We are not lawyers. But this is what we deal with, not only in Massachusetts, but I'm sure it's happening all over the country because the clients are talking about it. There was one group from Old Colony Correctional Facility or Center, OCCC, in Massachusetts that actually wrote a letter to the politicians. They wrote a letter to the politicians, to the lawyers, even the lawyers that they were complaining about, Prisoner Legal Services in this case. But they were saying that they've been making excuses for 20 years why they can't help. And I know that letter was true because I found the same problem with the same people. 20 years, and their excuses are always the same. No funding or not enough funding, not enough resources, not enough manpower. But yet, if you go to their website, you're going to see that they're advertising, that they work with those who are having their rights violated, civil rights violations. The same thing with ACLU. Go to their website and check it out. And these are people that have denied. When we were doing national, there were three prisoners in Pennsylvania who were crying out for help. In a hole, abused, and about ready to give up because no one would help them. I contacted ACLU before and after each one committed suicide. Before and after each one. You would have thought after calling them the first time for the first one, they would have at least checked into it, but they didn't. The next one died, and I contacted them. Still nothing. The third one died. And after the third one died, still nothing from ACLU, but one of the politicians in Pennsylvania, one of the senators, who also I consistently emailed and called and tried to get help, she goes before the media to say if she had known something about it, she would have had an internal investigation, independent. She knew about it. But this is how people are. They take things lightheartedly. Because she started talking about the bodies being cremated when, in fact, the bodies were never cremated. She didn't even have the decency to connect with the families of these individuals to find out, to give her condolences, to say she was sorry to hear about it. To this day, this woman, senator in Pennsylvania, a piece of nothing as far as I'm concerned, did nothing to console the family members, to help the family members, to even have an investigation into the prison after it happened. But that's what happens when people get put in power. They become too good to do anything for those less fortunate. They focus on their own narcissistic selves. And we have a lot of that in this country. Again, as I say, I've interviewed Franz Kurz from Germany, who advocates for the wrongfully convicted in this country. Miriam Jacob, who has been in the prisons in this country, who has advocated for prisoners in this country. She does volunteer work in one of her own prisons out there in the Netherlands. She works with the prisoners and individuals in and out of the prisons, the penal system. She's recently written a book, which is going to be out in another month or two. This is somebody from across the pond, miles and miles and miles away, that not only knows more about the penal system in the United States than the legislative members, the government, but she also knows of the injustices going on across this country, as does with Franz Kurz and others. Some legislative members went over to Norway and other countries, from what I understood, to see how they operate. How can they be so successful? Even the recidivism rate is practically nilch. Norway is considered the role model for every country in the world. And all these other countries right behind it. But yet the United States of America, that has mass incarceration, that's supposed to be so blessed and so powerful and so wealthy and all this kind of stuff, does not want to take into consideration that if it's successful for those people in other countries, then maybe it'll be successful for us in this country if we try to decarcerate rather than incarcerate the population of individuals that brought us to mass incarceration in the United States. But our government has such a big head that they don't want to look like they are taking advice from other countries that are, to them, lower. This is getting back to the individual minds of people. Insecurity. You see how quick everybody was to jump into this Russia-Ukraine deal. Now they're all coming together like a mob to go after Russia. But yet, they're forgetting they have business right here in this country, which is really making me mad because we are all really in need. This country's falling apart because everybody in this country that is in power is trying to be so big and look so big to other countries that this country is falling apart. We are going to eventually be the third world country, believe me, because all these third world countries now are saying they don't want to be considered third world countries anymore because they're coming up in the world. And while they're coming up in the world, the United States of America is going down in the world. But yet we still have these boastful attitudes of these individuals, insecure individuals, that want to look big and bad. These are probably people in high school and junior high school that were bullied on, and now they got some power, so all of a sudden they want to try to make it seem like they're the bullies, which it sure shows it. But I just want everybody to know, we cannot stereotype when it comes to prisoners. And we cannot think that the signs of the times that we are seeing around us, before us, mean nothing. Because these signs are trying to tell us something. Our Creator is trying to tell us something. Not just with the global warming, floods, fires, earthquakes, tornadoes, attitudes, wars, rumors of wars, power freaks. And I tell people, be yourselves. Don't let these bullies out there in the world who have power, fame, don't let them keep you from speaking out. And don't let your peers, whom you think are your friends, if you're afraid they're going to laugh at you or they're going to turn their backs on you, if you speak your piece, if you speak of injustices or things that you don't agree with, if you think they're going to walk away, let them walk away. I mean, is that going to hurt you? You came into this world with nothing. You'll go out with nothing. So why worry about somebody that's going to get mad at you for speaking about justice instead of injustice, for disagreeing with a lot of these people that you don't really agree with, but you're going along with them because you're friends with them? When they had this event at the State House one time, I went, and it was people who had loved ones serving lives in life in prison, and it also had people who had been affected by those people that were serving in prison. And there were three women. Two of them were very, very angry. They were so, you could see it in their face, evil, angry, whatever. But there was one that was with them. We were talking. She was one who had a loved one that was a victim, and I was one that had one that was an offender. And we were talking. People can do that, and I think this is where it's good for restorative justice. But restorative justice won't work for everyone because there are people out there in the world that have caused others to stumble. And even though they caused them to stumble, and those that stumbled are incarcerated, serving life and life without parole sentencing, the people that caused them to stumble are still trying their best to do everything that they can in their power to make it even worse for that person or those people. When you have people with that kind of a heart and that kind of a mind, you can pretty much understand why the incarcerated one or people fell. Because if somebody loses a loved one and that person that caused it is receiving a life in prison, walk away. God knows. If it's meant to be, God will keep it there. If it's not meant to be, God will somehow free the person. But if we have an evil person that doesn't want to accept the fact that that person is already serving their sentence of a life, They had all of their freedom taken from them. Let it go at that. But when you're that anxious to inflict even more pain, it's not because you lost a loved one. It's because that's what it was all about before you lost that loved one. And it's still in you. It is still inside you. And it's something that probably will never come out of you unless, like Jesus did in those days, free people of the evil spirit within them that's possessing them. There's so much we have to think about. So much we have to think about. And unfortunately, we don't do enough to thank God for what he's done for us. But we do enough to go in opposition of what his will is. If his will is for someone to be in prison, that person's in prison. Leave it at that. Let that person try to adjust, make the best of their time in prison. And so many people in prison, I see, have become either jailhouse lawyers, they've become ministers or pastors or whatever. A lot of them find their skills that they never even knew they had in poetry or music or writing. Some of the artwork that I have seen from the incarcerated individuals who have even sent me cards and thanks for the things that happened. Even those, when I look at the artwork, it's just amazing. So when they come out, they could get into their own businesses. They don't need to rely on anybody else. They just need a society that's forgiving and that's not going to hold it against them when they come out. There are incarcerated individuals who have written books. They have written books. A lot of them have written music. And a lot of these people that ended up in prison, they were insecure. You know, they grew up, a lot of them grew up in areas where there was a lot of drug involvement in their families, or there was a lot of abuse, verbal, physical, domestic violence. These people they weren't just born to go right to prison. They weren't born to do evil. It's the environment we live in that can make or break us. There was a prisoner that did everything right. And he got into a relationship where everything went wrong because the person that individual was involved with was someone that liked to party, she liked to drink, liked to swear, disrespectful to adults, everything opposite of what he was about. But yet these things happen. And sometimes they're not ready for it because they have never been taught to deal with something like that. And then you have a lot of these individuals that grow up in the city and they have to defend themselves because there's others out there that are going to be trying to abuse them or get them involved in gangs. And a lot of these people that become involved with gangs are usually people who are hurting and they need someone. They need support. They need somebody to hear them, to understand what they're feeling. But we in society are too busy to look at them, to help them, to listen. We're so busy until they do something wrong, and then everybody's ready to judge them. I remember there was a man, he was a young man. He had mental illnesses. His mother and father were divorced. His mother used to throw it in his face all the time that he looked like his father. She hated the father so much, she used to beat the kid. She used to throw him downstairs, do all these things to him. So as he got older, he had mental problems. And if he didn't take his medication, he'd walk around the neighborhood like a zombie. He'd go to people's houses. You open the door. You know him, so you're going to talk to him. He'd take your hand, and he starts walking you out of your house. You know, this is scary. But every time the police were called, they would say, oh, well, you know, we can't do anything. We can take him out of here, but we can't do anything. We can't put him in jail because he hasn't done anything wrong. There was a time when they said he was in this the parking lot of a department store. He was jumping on everybody's cars. Again, they came and they got them. They took them away. They never put them in any kind of mental institution. They never put them in any kind of hospital. But yet if, and he may have by now, I don't know. I haven't seen him for years and years and years. But if he had done something major, he's probably in prison now. But that's what they do. They wait until somebody actually commits the crime before they say, okay, now we can do something about it. No, it's not about waiting until someone commits the crime. You try to prevent the crime. And that's why they have so many of these, what do they call them, school to prison pipeline? We have to stop waiting for somebody to do something wrong before we try to help them, before we listen. Now, my whole thing is, and this is really frustrating for me, is the Department of Mental Health, the American Psychological Association, American Psychiatric Association, all of these people should be out there speaking on television, on the radio, going into the prison, trying to do something. Where is all the money going to them? Where is it all going? Research, research. We have so much funding that's going into research for everything that none of it's being used for prevention. None of it's being used to help people. I contacted the American Psychological Association, and I asked to have someone call me back because I actually wanted to get them on the show. And they said that they were going to have someone call me back. And that was about maybe two weeks ago. And I haven't seen or heard from anyone yet. That's the American Psychological Association. Department of Mental Health, another one. I contacted Mass General Hospital one time, and I spoke to somebody there about the possibility of doing some independent work in the prisons with these prisoners. You know, they have all these clinical studies, all these clinical surveys, all these things that they do, and they pay people in the communities to participate in these clinical studies. And yet we have prisoners, and maybe not all prisoners want to do it, but we have prisoners that are wanting to participate in some of these studies for free. So why isn't it happening? Some of these studies would involve the heart. Some of these studies would involve the bones. Some of them would involve the muscles. Some of them would involve so many different things. 2.3 million people in prison. I'm sure there's going to be a need for a lot of these studies by them to see if there's anything that they can do on the outside to help these incarcerated individuals with things that have been damaged by them from the medical providers of the Department of Corrections, or if they can help with other medical issues that are not being addressed or maybe have been addressed and been told they couldn't do anything about it. But these hospitals, these major hospitals, Lahey Clinic, Mass General Hospital, Beth Israel, New England Baptist, and I'm sure you got plenty in New York State, we need to start calling them and trying to get them involved in helping these prisoners do their own clinical studies. It would save them money, and at the same time, it may help a lot of these incarcerated individuals, men and women. There's been too much suffering. There's been too many people who have been harmed, affected by the lack of compassion and caring. And these people that are incarcerated, many have problems, but not all of them have problems. There are many educated people incarcerated who have made a mistake. And to me, as long as you're in school, you still have the mentality, the mind of a youth. So anybody, if you're a college student, anyone under the age of 25 or even under the age of 26, whatever it might be, they need to be looked at when they have made one mistake and there is no history of any law enforcement or any drugs or anything. When you look at an individual serving a life sentence or a life without parole and there was nothing in their past to indicate that they could be violent or they are violent, then you know there's rehabilitation that can be done. But yet, a lot of them, once targeted, are not able to be rehabilitated because they're deprived and denied every opportunity. We need to get people involved to go into these prisons, independent overseers. We need to get independent overseers, independent medical providers, independent psychological providers. And, you know, they're getting the Department of Corrections, they get all kinds of funding for the programs, for all the things that go on in the prison. But what the audience does not know, and what a lot of people don't know, is that they, with that funding for these programs, they have what's called a volunteer, a director of volunteer services. The directors of volunteer services sends notices around to people who have been involved with them in the past, sends notices around to all these people to see who would like to come in and do workshops and training in specific areas. They even ask for volunteers to go in and go in. Now they have an imam, which is for the Muslims, but to have volunteers to go in and teach or work with the Muslim population. And then they look for volunteers to work in different other areas to do these workshops for free. For free. But yet they're getting funding for it. And these people that these legislative members or whomever that are working with the department over the funding issues, they walk right over it. Either they don't hear it, they don't know it, or they don't care. But the Department of Corrections gets a lot of funding to get volunteers to come in and do the work that they're getting paid for. The DOC is getting paid for. That is really a big joke. But that goes to show you the education, the mentality of our government leaders. You know, they have the education, but that's about it. Wisdom? No. And I'll tell you, unless you've been there and done it, like I say, even with social workers, unless you've been in a single parent home, you know, unless you've been in a multicultural family background, unless you know or have been taught about it, cultures, which they don't teach you in college when you're going to college to become a social worker. But these social workers, these people go to college to become social workers. They come out of college with a piece of paper. None of them are married, no children, mostly prominent backgrounds, never been in any abusive situation. Don't know anything about cultures. Now they come out of college and they're going to get a job working for some CPS or Children's Protective Services or Department of Social Services or whatever. And they're going to go into these homes where there's a lot of dysfunction going on. And they're going to start talking about what they want these people to do. You don't tell people who have been going through all of this what to do. You ask them, you talk to them, you evaluate them. It takes 30 days to evaluate. Do you know when somebody goes to trial, most people that have been convicted of a crime or going to trial for a crime, most of them get less than a week for their trials, less than a week before they're sentenced. But yet you have these law enforcement, these police officers that killed people, like the George Floyd case, that not only did his trial last for a long time, but even at that, they wanted to appeal right away. And even at that, they let linger on. But a normal citizen, especially racial disparity, their sentences last for less than a week. I mean, before they get sentenced, before they get found guilty or innocent. Less than a week. Going back to social work, we have 30 days. We have a whole month to evaluate a case. Once we evaluate that case, then we decide what services the family needs. Then we talk it over with the family, either the single parent mother, the single parent father, or both couples that are having problems. We talk it over with them. We find out how we can resolve some of these issues. Then we suggest if they feel or we feel as a social worker that they need counseling, we try to work it out, or they even if they need residential treatment, we try to work it out with them to find out if they have any family members that would qualify to become independent foster care providers. That way the children stay in the family, the children know the family, the person caring for them. The person caring for them is reimbursed for their time and their food and everything, and the couple or the individual is getting the treatment they need. That's not how it works when you have these people go to college to become social workers, and they come out as rookies with no experience whatsoever. And they go in the home, they evaluate, and then they tell the person what they want them to do. You have to go to counseling. Well, what if the person doesn't have transportation? Are you going to drive them? That's what I used to do with some. But no, that's not what they do. They will say, no, we don't do that. Well, how in the heck do you expect them to get to counseling? And they say after a child is 5 years of age, the parent has to go to work or get a job. Okay, so the parent gets a job. The job starts at 8 o'clock. The daycare doesn't open till 9. So what happens then? And then if the social worker is not a friendly person and being abrupt with them, well, you have to go for counseling. I'm sorry, but, you know, if you want to keep right then and there, when you start talking to the clients, they're going to become resistant. No longer can you work with them. But the social worker, in many cases, goes back to her supervisor or his supervisor and says, well, they won't do this, this, or this. So all of a sudden, it becomes a care and protection. It becomes a CMP. It becomes a court issue. And most likely, the children will be placed in strangers' homes, foster homes. And there's a lot of good foster parents out there. But there are a lot of people that become foster parents for the money itself. So what do you hear after that? You hear about these children being violated, abused, or murdered. This is why we need to become passionate. We need to become compassionate. We need to become understanding. And we need to teach those in leadership. Because even though they have a piece of paper and they've been on boards and they've been sitting in their seats, and that's what most of them do, there is so much going on that they need to work on. But that's the kind of country we're living in, a cold-hearted, ignorant, unwillingness to help, corrupt, greedy country who wants to get into everyone else's business but their own, in their own backyards. We have problems in this country. We have problems in the prisons, the Department of Corrections across the country. We have problems in the nursing homes, because many people in the nursing homes are being violated or sins are being committed by the employees. We have abuses going on in the prisons, deprivation. We have all these going on in the prisons where people are either being killed by overseers and it's called something else in their heads, or the person is, or people are committing suicide because they can no longer cope. We have people in the streets that are being murdered by the very law enforcement, the very people we're supposed to put our trust in. We have people in homeless shelters that have no place to go. We have children that are being abducted and violated. We have a pandemic in this world. And in Massachusetts, everybody is so quick to get back to work and play that they don't want to follow suit with the very people who are professionals when it comes to medical. But everybody's going to go behind the medical. So if something happens, we can all look at it as though, whose fault is it? It's not the people in the medical field, the CDC. It's not them. It's us. So I hope that everybody will take heed to what they heard today, whether you like it or not. Try to be transparent. Try to be for real. Try to be yourself. Try to be compassionate. Try to be understanding. Look for signs, body language, smiles, tears, whatever the case may be. Try to find somebody incarcerated and try to help them, not hurt them. Don't judge because you don't know what you're being judged for. Pray for them. Pray for these people who have fallen, who are incarcerated. And remember, God has his lambs amongst the wolves behind those prison walls, as well as in the communities, as well as in the homes. There are people behind those prison walls who are much more compassionate, understanding, and forgiving as many of us on the outside. And whether you know it or not, or whether you want to believe it or not, there are people in the communities who are criminal-like and who have caused a lot of these people to stumble, playing their games, their head games, trying to destroy somebody because of their pigmentation or because of the mental status, because of their disabilities. United States of America, I will always call it that. To me, America is not what it is. It's the United, because it's the United with people from all over the world, representation of their countries. And we should be proud to say the United States of America, because we are part of the representatives. But yet, even though we're living in the United States of America, people from all over the world live here. We still have people in this country that think that they are better than everybody else and that it should only be one race. If you feel that way, go to your own country where it is of your own race and let the United States of America be just what it is, united. People think that they are above others because that's the way they've been raised. But unfortunately, those who raised you were raised by those who raised them. And it's a cycle. And this cycle that we are talking about right now needs to be broken. You who have any kind of biases in you need to wake up and smell the coffee. This is the United States of America. We have people who are incarcerated because of the attitudes, the hatred that was brought into this country by those who are biased, who were raised to be biased, and those who were raised by people who were raised to be biased. Let's break the cycle, because these people behind those prison walls are God's fallen children. And even though you may not like them, and you may not like those who are in the community, because of whatever condition you feel what is not acceptable to you, you may not want to tolerate them, but God put them there for a reason. He has a plan. And every plan for each and every one of his fallen children behind those prison walls and in the community and in their homes and in the homes of others, God's plan, as it says in the Bible, last will be first. So I hope you've gotten something out of this. I hope you'll think about it. And when you have, if it was me, if it was child or my child, try to do something each day. Try to do something a little more positive, a little bit more, that you will know that you have made God proud. You have made our Father, you have made him proud of us. That's what we need to do. Because right now, this is a very dysfunctional country, and it's fallen deeper and deeper and deeper into something that God will never bring back if we don't change. So again, I thank everyone for listening. I thank everyone for listening. I hope all of you have gotten something out of this, and I hope that you will share whatever you have learned about compassion with others. And let's not again forget those incarcerated, the elderly, those in wheelchairs, those that are terminally ill, those who are over the age of 50 or 55 years of age, those who have served 25 years or more behind those prison walls. Let's start looking at them, and let's start trying to understand what went wrong and find ways that we can help and better this community that we live in and better this country, instead of leaving it behind while we focus on the problems of other people's countries. And I thank you all for listening, and we are now going to end this episode. Thank you so much, and God bless.